Hi everybody. Welcome. Thanks for coming. My name is Martin Woodward. That's what I look like, in case you forget. And we're going to be talking this afternoon about being agile across technology borders. So about cross-platform development, mixing that with all the different platforms in your organisation, and how you can continue to be agile across these boundaries in your company, which tend to try and restrict agility. So, a little bit about me first, hopefully. Oops, but if I don't cover up the little bit of thing with a piece of paper. There we go. So, that's how to get hold of me. If you've got any questions, I'll put this up at the end. If you want my email address and things, or Twitter, or whatever, or my blog. The slides are obviously going to be on the site, and the video will be online on the site later as well. I'm a program manager for Team Foundation Server at Microsoft. Who uses Team Foundation Server here? Okay, wow, cool. I work on a product called Team Explorer Everywhere. Who uses Team Explorer Everywhere here already? Okay, great. This is good. So that's what I do. That's my day job. In the evenings, I wrote a couple of books with a friend of mine, Brian Keller, and some other friends. Not that that makes me an expert. It's just a blatant plug for the books. Very good books. Good Christmas presents. So there we go. I live in Ireland. So this was just a short hop for me on EasyJet. Very easy flight. It's a nice view, you know. It rains a lot in Ireland, so... that's the view from my front door, actually. So, that's where I live. But I work in... The rest of my team are based in Raleigh, Durham, in North Carolina. That's where the most of the Team Explorer Everywhere team is. We'll talk about Team Explorer Everywhere in a minute. That's where they're based. And that's where half of the people that work on Team Foundation Server, our application lifecycle management product, that's where half of those people are based, in Raleigh, North Carolina. The other half are based in Redmond, in America. So obviously, we've already got some challenges to do agility in our organization because of the distributed nature of our teams. There's not just this, you know, it's not just me in Ireland. We've also got people in India, we've got people in China, people all around the globe working on Visual Studio and on Team Foundation Server. And yet, I'm going to talk a lot today about Team Foundation Server, because that's what I do in my job. That's the kind of team I've worked with most recently. We use Scrum in Team Foundation Server. We deliver on three-week sprints. We deploy production code every 3 weeks, sometimes more often than every 3 weeks. Yeah, we do that, and so we have to be agile. And there's good reasons to be agile. Now, the problem we've all got, and the problem we're all here today to talk about, is customers don't care how things work. They just really don't care at all. All your customers care about is they want to buy something from you. They want to get a service from you. They don't care the technology that implemented that solution at all. I used to work for an airline. We had, you know, flight selling systems that were written on the mainframe. We had an air miles system, loyalty points system that was run off some PCs. We had other systems that were running on Oracle and a bunch of stuff. We had one of everything that ever exists, I'm pretty sure. And yet when you come in and buy a flight from this airline, you just want to go and buy a flight, and ideally maybe be offered car hire as well, because we make more money if we upsell you into car hire, or maybe sell you a hotel, sell you some travel insurance, make sure we can tell you how many miles you'll get for your loyalty scheme as part of this journey. And that requires the integrations of tens, sometimes 20 different systems, all built completely differently. Customer doesn't care. They've got no respect for any of those technology boundaries. The problem is, our technology boundaries often leak into our customer experiences, you can kind of tell where one team finished and another team took over, often. That's bad. Things should be seamless from a customer experience point of view. So how do you break down those technology boundaries? Well, a problem we have as developers is we specialise. I'm a Java developer. I work for the Visual Studio team, but I'm still a Java developer. That's the technology I happen to do most of my coding in at the moment. But I work in in my office, we have lots of people who aren't Java developers or .NET developers. They're skillful in those things. So developers naturally specialise. And when we as developers pick tooling, if it's an organic adoption of the tools, we just pick whatever we want to work with that week. The problem is the Java team will often go pick one system, and maybe the .NET guys will pick another system, and maybe the Mac guys and the iOS guys will pick another system. And all these systems for building the software, they're all isolated. They're all little islands. And your customer requirements come in and don't flow. The flow of value isn't there. They stick there, and then you end up building contracts between, we want to do flight selling. Therefore, you need to build this. Here's a spec. You need to build this. Here's another spec. And, it becomes waterfall. And then with a waterfall process, obviously, you have challenges in changing your development as situations change. Maybe some new legislation comes in. They increase passenger air duties. Europe will bringing a new law on carbon emissions, and we have to implement a new change which reflects how we do our business, yet we've got these strict specs that are being handed out. It slows us down. We need agility. So how do you become more agile when you have these technology boundaries? Well, the first thing to try and do is to nurture some collective ownership for the customer's problems. So, we want to sell a flight. You need to get the whole teams together and think, right then, how do we achieve this new requirement? We've got a new thing coming in. How do we achieve that? Get them all together. Get the teams themselves be focusing on the customer goal, not the spec. We need to achieve this. And by focusing on the requirement, what the customer needs, rather than the contract, you get some flexibility. So maybe one team, it's easier if a certain amount of work is done in one team's area than another's, and maybe you start to transfer, probably people start building up like not just islands of technology, but islands of ownership of people as well. And that's the harder organisational challenge, is to make your organisation target what customers need, not what you yourselves want to build. Does that make sense? So try and nurture some collective ownership and focus on requirements. A big tip that we found is, we do 3-week sprints. We ship every 3 weeks. When we first started doing this, we had offset sprint schedules. So, one team would finish 1 week. Another team within the group would finish a different week. The sprint boundaries weren't aligned. We thought that would be really good because then, we know if something's arrived in time, we can pull it in. We thought it would be brilliant. Turns out it doesn't work, is what we found. That it's much better for everybody to have synchronized sprint schedules within a certain team area, because the problem you get is you never have a nice dependency that's, starts at the beginning, comes down to here, down to here, down to here. It's never a straight line dependency. It's always more complicated than that. And so you always end up getting little circular dependencies. And in fact, you want circular dependencies because you want those feedback loops of requirements and features going back into another team and feeding round. With offset sprints, we found that there was just extra waste because we wouldn't start working on something and for a week or two after it had been delivered, or if we finished, we couldn't start work on it yet until 1 or 2 weeks until they delivered. So by synchronising, by sprinting in time, having the same points, it's just easier, it's more predictable, everybody gets to practice, everybody in the organisation is doing similar things at a similar time, and it just works better. Once the process becomes, it's just expected, people can do it easier, because it's practiced, it's just how we do it, you know? It just works. So, I don't know why it works, but it does. And then, of course, the most important thing is to have a single source of the truth. A single point where your data is being stored that everybody agrees is the real version. I used to go to meetings where, luckily, this was a good customer. You know, they had requirements in a spreadsheet, which was pretty advanced. Most people just kind of never bothered writing them down. But these actually had, you know, requirements in a spreadsheet. So each Monday morning, we'd open up the spreadsheet and look through the requirements to see where we were. And each Monday morning, it was about 11 o'clock before we'd all agreed on which version of the spreadsheet we were going to use that day. You know, everybody had different versions around. It was just a mess. So you need a single source of the truth. Now, I honestly, paper can often be the best tool. This is a picture from inside the Visual Studio building in Building 41. Where we were doing some user experience work, and we were doing some voting stuff, and we were just trying to get, like, some idea of what we were, so we captured all the data in some, you know, brainstorming meetings, we did that sort of thing, stuck it on the board, organised it, and you could really, you know, get an idea of what was happening. So it sometimes is the best tool. The problem with paper, of course, is it doesn't scale very well. It doesn't scale for distributed teams. I know a story, a guy called Jeffrey Hammond from Forrester was telling me a story once. They have a scrum board in their company that, you know, they're using sticky notes. And when they finish some work or whatever, they would just, you know, take the sticky notes down. Occasionally, sometimes the sticky notes might fall off the board. And he happened to be working late one night and saw the cleaner come round. And as she was cleaning, she accidentally knocked a couple of post-it notes off the board as she brushed past. They fell on the floor. She was like, oh, so again. So she took them off the floor and stuck them in a completely different column in the to-do pile or the done pile. And he was like, what are you doing? And she said, oh, yeah, I know, they always do that. Every night I come in here. And he's like, so yeah. Paper doesn't always scale. So in Team Foundation Server 11, the next version that's coming out soon, we've actually tried to take some of the places where paper works really well for visualization, but try and, you know, scale it better, scale it electronically. So that's obvious things like, I mean, who's seen this already? So this is a replacement to an Agile storyboard, but built into TFS. So these are just, I can show you this actually in a minute if you haven't seen it already. This is just, you can take a work item and drag and drop it around. And this is in the browser. So this works just as well in Safari, in Chrome on the Mac as it does on Windows. It's just a browser application. So you can drag these story cards around, plot work. This is all stuff that works regardless of where you are. And in fact, I have a session straight after this one upstairs in Kilimanjaro about taking application lifecycle management to the cloud. So taking Team Foundation Server and not just having it installed inside your company, but having it hosted in the internet, in Azure. So again, you can my personal source code for Team Explorer Everywhere is stored in Azure, and I can access it from anywhere in the world, from my Mac, from my Windows machine. Don't need to be VPN'd in. I can just go work on my code anywhere. So that's because Team Foundation Server is a single source of the truth for us. Now, once you start collecting all this data in one place, again, don't really care where it is as long as it's in one place, I'd obviously prefer you use Team Foundation server, because then I get paid, but whatever. Once you start collecting that data, you can start doing interesting things with it. So, for example, you can surface it in different ways. So this is a typical team dashboard in TFS. So we have a notion of teams now in Team Foundation server, finally. And this is the dashboard you would see when you log into TFS. And, you know, you can pull in your work item queries and pin them as a favorite to the dashboard. And then you see how many work items are in a particular state. You can see how many changes there were to version control. You can put your build report on here to see if there's, you know, see what state the build is in. You also get things like the burn down chart. Because all that data now is in a single accessible place, you can do crazy things over that data, whatever you want. The world's your oyster. You spend all your time actually being able to focus on the development, and you know, managers don't have to spend all their time collecting data. The data is just automatically collected. So our managers can actually manage. And as far as I'm concerned as a developer, that means the managers can leave me alone. They don't have to ask me for data. You know, just look at TFS. Also, all that data is brought into your development environment. And that's your development environment wherever you are. So obviously, it works inside Visual Studio, great. But it also comes into, say, Eclipse. This is Eclipse running on Windows. This is me doing a little Android development here in Eclipse using the APK, doing a bit of Java development. And there's my product backlog in the IDE. I never have to leave my development environment to see all this data. And it's all collected for me. Obviously runs not just on, as people saw, not just on Windows, but it runs wherever, you know, Eclipse runs. We make Team Foundation Server go to where your developers are, not make your developers come to Team Foundation Server. If you want your developers to adopt a tool, to adopt a process, it just needs to be easier than what they were doing before. Everybody likes an easy life. I do. And developers are like water flowing down a hill. This is what water just flows down hills. I get a lot of water in Ireland, and flowing down hills. And if you don't dig a ditch for the water, then it'll go everywhere, and it'll just spread around. So if you dig a channel for the water to flow down, then it'll go the direction you want. You want your process to make it as easy as possible. You want to make it ridiculously easy to do build automation, to have automated builds. You want automated builds to be easier than doing a build locally. Because then you've got this feedback loop that build automation gives you of, is my build in a good state or not? You want checking in to be easy. You want updating your work, have I finished or not yet, to be easy, because then people will do it, and then you get to improve the processes. One of the great things about Team Foundation Server, and this is one of the reasons why I didn't used to work for Microsoft, but I was a customer and liked Team Foundation Server. And one of the reasons I really like it is because I found developers, once you bring the work into the IDE in front of them, you know, a work item's there, along with their source code, and it's just easy to update. It's now just a computer system to you, to me, as a developer. So you start thinking, well, A, where's my work item to associate this bit of work with, which is already good, because now you're thinking about, translated into bigger picture, what work am I trying to do? You know, what I'm constantly looking at that customer's requirement, at that user story or product backlog item, whatever you call it. And I'm making sure I'm doing that piece of work. If I start to do a piece of work that doesn't have a story for it, that starts to feel odd now. Where's my story? Because I'm used to seeing it here. And it starts reinforcing the kind of process we want our developers to follow so the process starts to improve. And then when the developers say, hey, this isn't working, this field makes no sense, what they're actually telling you is, you know, like the state ready for test makes no sense because we have no testers. I tested it. It's ready to go to production, whatever. Maybe that's what your process is like. A lot of people it is. So, let's get rid of that state then. Let's remove it if it makes no sense. And then what you're actually doing is you're getting an accurate picture of your process. So you can think, well, do we remove the state from Team Foundation Server's representation of the state model? Or do we introduce testers? You know, whichever. In many cases, the answer is to remove the state. Because you want to encourage a flow of value from what your customers need to what gets delivered to them. Okay. And here's another example. Not just, obviously, the work item tracking data is pulled in, but also data about your builds, you know, your Ant or your Maven builds, as well as your .NET builds. And you never have to leave the development environment to know if it works or not. And that's how it makes it easier than doing a build locally, because you can tell just with a little green tick if this build works or not. So you have a very high degree of confidence of that. And again, we go to your developers wherever they are, even if they're, you know, old school, on the command line, using Vi or Emacs or whatever, you can still use Team Foundation Server and still have all the access to TFS. And use Team Foundation Server to be your single source of the truth. So the rest of the talk, we're going to focus in on Team Explorer Everywhere, the product that I work on, and kind of show you some of the features of that and how that helps you do the single source of truth. Is that okay? Okay, any questions, please do shout out. I'm not a particularly formal guy, as you might know, so just please raise your hand if you've got questions. Okay, so Team Explorer Everywhere, typical Microsoft name, it's incredibly long, but what does it actually mean? Well, it's mainly two things. Well, it's mainly three things, actually, but I always let you know. The main two things that you see are the Team Foundation Server plugin for Eclipse. So I work on the Team Foundation Server team, as well as producing the TFS plugin into Visual Studio. We also produce the TFS plugin into Eclipse. We develop those as we're developing Team Foundation Server. They requirements from one feed into the other. So if my team, who builds this particular, you know, plugin for Eclipse, need a feature in the server, we put that feature request into the server, it gets prioritized with everything else and delivered as a feature from the server. So we're just a client to TFS, that we are in the TFS team. We also have the command line client. Who's used the command line client on Windows? TF. Have you used that? Yeah, it's not many people have, but it's there is a command line there on Windows. If you go to the Visual Studio command prompt, type TF help, your whole screen will fill up with text because there's a bunch of commands you can do from the command line. Windows people typically are happier with graphical user interfaces, you know, and maybe the Windows shell extensions. But the command line is quite popular over on Unix, especially. And that the same commands you type in on Windows are the same commands you type in on Unix, which is great, actually, because things like Cruise Control is an open source build server, Hudson, Jenkins, all these open source products, and even commercial ones, quite often use our command line as an easy way to talk to TFS, the version control. And because those commands are the same cross-platform, not only do you not have to learn new commands when you're on different machines, any scripts you have which use those commands are very easily transferred between systems. And if you build systems which go on top of that command line client, then they also can be cross-platform. Now, obviously the command line client isn't a great way to build integrations with things. You know, you're firing out to another process. It's a very crude integration. So what we have on the .NET side is an API written in .NET that you can talk to Team Foundation Server with. It's the same API we build to build the Visual Studio integration to Team Foundation Server. In Team Explorer Everywhere, this is all written in Java. This is 99.99% Java. I say 99.9% because you see the little native bit down the bottom corner? We actually have some code to do some magic that Java can't do. Things like talking to the keychain on Mac to store credentials, or a key ring on Linux. Talking Kerberos on a HP UX system so that you can have single sign-on with Windows, blah, blah, blah. We do a bunch of magic. That's a tiny little bit of code which we actually compile for all the different operating systems we support. You know, Solaris, HP UX, Linux, Mac OS, including like PowerPC, x86, you know, x64 versions. We have a lot of boxes in our build farm that, you know, sit off and build things. So anyway. Mostly Java, as I was saying, sorry, tangent. And the SDK we make available as well. So all of our calls that we have to talk to Team Foundation Server from Java, from our Eclipse plugin or the command line client, they're all available for you to use as well. So if you have any systems that happen to be written in Java but also need to talk to TFS, go for it. You can just use the API. It's freely redistributable in your applications. So if you wanted to sell a commercial application which talked to TFS and was written in Java and ran on the Mac, we'll give you the software to do that. Okay, so that's Team Explorer Everywhere. We're going to show it you, really. That's just easier to have a look. So, as I mentioned, I am on the Mac, hopefully. It'll come round in a second. That's the screen I can see. Oh, please come round. Oh, no. That's called the spinning beach ball of death in the Mac world, by the way. So, it's not always perfect. It's having a bit of a think. That's interesting. Okay. This is going to be fun for a demo, if it wants to do that. Right, then. So, let's minimise the slides. So, I'm here. I'm actually running Windows over on a little virtual machine here. So, this is where my Team Foundation server's running. It's just running on Windows 7 in a virtual machine on my Mac at the minute. I could talk to one that was out in the cloud, but I wanted to talk to one locally just in case the internet wasn't working in here today. So that's why I've got it running in a virtual machine. But we're going to do most of the rest of the session over here on the Mac. So who's seen Eclipse before? Who uses Eclipse? And who has people in their organisations who use Eclipse and Java? Okay. Who's here to learn about things like Xcode or Unix development with TFS as well, just so I can kind of understand? So who's got Unix people in the companies? Xcode development, iOS development, Android development? Okay, same people. Great. So let's start with Eclipse then, as that had the most hands. So this is Eclipse. This is what Eclipse looks like on the Mac. It's just Eclipse. Now I have Team Explorer Everywhere installed here. You go to an Eclipse guy who's never been near any Microsoft technology and say, hey, we want to go use Team Foundation Server. You know, you might get some funny looks at first. What's this Microsoft you speak of? You know? Surely they can't have an Eclipse integration. And they install it, and the first thing they have is a sigh of relief. Because what they were expecting probably is for us to have completely taken over their Eclipse experience and broke it somehow. You know, that's sort of what the kind of things they expect. Not at all. We're very respectful of Eclipse conventions. I'm a long-time Eclipse guy. The whole team come from that background. So it's just Eclipse to begin with. The first hint you're using Team Foundation Server is if we go to Window. Now, there's a thing in Eclipse called Perspectives, where you can switch views. So you could go to Open Perspective, do Other, and look there. You can see there's a Team Foundation Server Exploring Perspective. Just like there's a... Just like there's a, you know, a CVS one and a whatever source control system you might have. Now, remember, though, Team Foundation Server is much, much more than just source control. You've got all the work item tracking in the builds, and that's what we're going to cover. So, there's Team Foundation Server. But what I'm going to do is, who's seen any demos of Visual Studio 11, the next version of Visual Studio that's coming up? Okay, a fair number of you. So some of you recognise this. What I'm going to do is show you, who's seen demos of Visual Studio 2010? Okay, Ryan, well, if you've seen Visual Studio 2010, you've just seen a different view. If you've seen Visual Studio 11, you see the new Team Explorer. So, and that's the new Team Explorer experience. It's just a bit cleaner and not a tree, and it's a lot more extensible. Notice, this new Team Explorer, we haven't even shipped the beta yet of Visual Studio 11, and already we have the integrations that we're doing in Visual Studio, they're being developed in parallel with the integrations we're doing in Eclipse and cross-platform. It's the same team. So here we have Team Explorer, and I could do things like go to Source Control Explorer, And I can... I'm just going to close PowerPoint for a second and come back to it, because it seems to be taking up a lot of memory. Oh yeah, it's actually quit, which is why, there we go. Hopefully things will get faster now. Right, so there's Source Control Explorer. And we can see anyone who's familiar with Source Control Explorer, again, in the Visual Studio world will be instantly familiar here. It's just Source Control Explorer. But it's the full Source Control Explorer. Everything you can do in Source Control Explorer on Visual Studio, look at that menu. That's ridiculous, isn't it? We've got far too many options in that menu. But we're going to try and simplify this menu, by the way, make it easier. But the point is, you can do everything you want to do with Source Control from Eclipse on the Mac. You never have to leave. There's a lot of functions there. If you show a Java team, you just right-click on that menu and show them that menu. Instantly, they're surprised. They're like, this was more than I was thinking. So you've got them on side already. Anyway, so this is Source Control. Go through. And what we could do is bring a project in. For instance, I could import one here from AdventureWorks if I wanted to. Let's see what I have now. I'm just there. So there we go. But I've already come in, just for the sake of time, I've already imported a project into my what's called an Eclipse workspace, so into my local workspace. Oh, remember in Visual Studio, if you click on like this bit here, it'll open up Windows Explorer on the path. It's the same thing here, but it doesn't open Windows Explorer, obviously. It opens Finder in the right location. You know, it's just the same, just translated to a different operating system. So there we go, blah, blah, blah. It's just Source Control Explorer. So I'm going to come in here. I'm going to open up app.java, and this is Eclipse. So, you know, I'll start typing. So let's see. Now let's translate it into some language. Anyone? Hello? Welt or something? What would that be? Is that good? Veiled, is it? E? Is it something like I can't remember. Is that right? Go on, sorry. E, L, E, no, yeah, that'll do, you can understand that, there we go. I've had my Dutch lesson for today, I'm not very good at it, sorry. Okay, now I'm a consultant, so I used to be a consultant rower, so I'm going to save that. And as soon as I save that, you can see now, we've got this little tick here. So we're keeping track of what's happening in Source Control automatically for you. But as a developer, you don't really know that we're doing stuff, it just works. So I might come down here now and I'm going to go copy-paste that. So, you know, Control-C, well, Command-C. Go into my unit test, and then Command-V. There we go. I'll save that. Little tick. Say we changed it. Okay. So, it's just Source Control. We now go to check in these files. We go to the pending changes view. You can see there's those two files we've been working on. And if you come in, we can add a note. So, log to NL. And then we have a bunch of other stuff we can do at this point in time. So we might want to, for example, let's select from our query, let's just go for product backlog. Okay. So we have a bug there. We could associate our check-in with a bug that's already been stored, a work item called a bug that's been associated in Team Foundation Server already. And then we need a bunch of stuff. Let's just check that in, actually, and we'll not associate it yet. And we'll say check in. And now that's now taking those changes and storing them in Team Foundation Server, a single source of the truth. So if somebody comes over to Windows, does a get latest, they have that version of the truth. Okay, so check in. Wow. Does that, you know, amazing. You know, 2011. Let's see what else we can do. So as well as Source Control, oh, I should mention, everything you want to do in Source Control is here. You know, if I go to the Team menu, Team is where things live, to do with Teams inside of Eclipse. So on the Team menu, I can do View History. That'll bring up the new History view. I can click on that, click on, say, sorry, I just did the details. I click on that version there, and I could, let's do that one, and that one. I could compare those two versions, for example, and see what the differences are between those files. And I'm just using the standard Eclipse compare editor in here. This, again, is all perfectly... This is just great for a Java developer. They're feeling very at home. Yeah, just that. I can do... What else can I do on here that's interesting? Obviously, if you do any things like, you know, when you add a file. So if I come in here and do class, and just do class A, hit finish. And then let's do the same with class B. Class B, hit finish. That's generated a couple of files for us. It's automatically picked up the fact we've added them, yeah? It just happens, whatever Eclipse is doing. So, class A and B. Check in. Yeah, okay. And then you come in here and maybe you want to rename class B, so you just, you know, refactor, rename class B to be class C, hit enter. And that's going to do a refactoring in Eclipse, which will go through and rename the file for you. And I'm going to check that in. And I've renamed it with capital L, so that's exciting. There we go, never mind. So, and you see, everything you do in Eclipse automatically gets picked up inside of TFS. It's completely transparent to the developer. No friction, you know? That's the whole point, is to reduce developer friction, make it easy. Okay. So, that's simple stuff. Now, you notice that last check-in, if I just do a quick history on this, team view history, you see I renamed the file. I didn't leave a change set comment, first of all, first bad. But then, if I click on this, I can actually see what happened to that file in between. That was when I added it, and if I'd edited it in between, then I would actually see a history prior to my rename and prior to any merges or branches and things that I'd done or moves. We track all that. So, blah, 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 blah. But I didn't leave a comment. And that's bad. I generally don't like rules in general. I'm not a big fan of rules. I'm very Dutch in that regard. Rules aren't good. So, I don't like to force people to do certain things. However, there's two things I force on my development team. One is I really, really hate this way of doing parentheses. And we can have countless arguments about how parentheses should be. But that's what developers do. So we have coding standards. They're actually enforced inside the IDE for us. We do that. But another thing I hate is I like people to do check-in comments. When I go through history, I like to see why they made the changes. I look in history to see what changes they made, you know. I don't want them to tell me what they're doing. I want them to tell me why they're doing it. When you write a comment, you know, I changed the thing from hello world to hello world, whatever. I didn't write my comment, change to hello world, because I can see that by looking at the code. What I did is I wrote a comment that said why I changed the code, because I was localizing it to really bad Dutch. So, again, I want people to do check-in comments. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to switch on what's called a check-in policy in Team Foundation Server. A Team Foundation Server has the ability to run some code on your client-side machine before each check-in to validate the check-in. And Eclipse and the cross-platform integration is no different. So I'm going to add a check-in policy, and these are the ones that ship out of the box, which is a change set comments policy one there. If you wanted to write your own particular check-in policy that wasn't one of these, you know, if you wanted to make sure before you check in, you've shook a chicken, jump on a leg, and span around three times, if you can write that in code, then hook it up to the Kinect, that'd be cool, then you could do that as a check-in policy. I wouldn't advise it. I'd rather have check-in was easy, but you could do that as a check-in policy. And part of the Java SDK we provide has a bunch of samples as to how to do check-in policies for Eclipse and for cross-platform command line. So we'll switch on the change set comments policy, click OK, and then we'll do OK. And now if I try and do a check-in, so I'm just going to say fix parens or something. Right, so that's in my comment there. If I now try and check in without leaving a check-in comment, it's going to give me an error and say, error, some policy requirements weren't met, and the only option is to do cancel. And if I go down to my check-in policies, it says here, please provide some comments about your check-in. So I'll come in and I'll say, what was I doing? Fixing the code convention. Go back to here, and then now it says all check-in policies have been satisfied. So it's helping us enforce the rules that we want, but be very, very careful about check-in policies, please. Because check-in policies reduce the number of check-ins. If you have to do something before you can check in, then you will check in less often. It's just human nature. So what I personally prefer is I basically just switch on that one, and another one we check, the other one we switch on in Microsoft is we make a check-in note. I actually got it configured on this one. We make a check-in note available for source code reviewer. Internally in my team, every check-in has to have a comment associated with it and has to have the name of the person who code-reviewed it for you. So, and we just enforce that. But they're the only two things we do enforce. We don't enforce unit test coverage. We don't enforce code conventions. We don't enforce clean compiles, even. So if you're checking code that doesn't compile, you just basically are ashamed, because what we do have is a continuous integration build that runs on top of our code. That as soon as you check that in and we have that code in our system, we run a build and we check it compiles, we check the unit tests all pass, we check the unit test coverage has gone up, not down, or at least stayed the same. We check that we make sure it applies to code conventions and that you haven't introduced any known security bugs that we can use using a thing called find bugs, which is static code analysis on Java. We do all those rule checks as part of the build. We let you check in first, and I think that's key. I like that. But you can do whatever you want with chain policies. Okay. So we'll say that. And as well as checking in, we're also going to associate this check-in with a work item. In fact, let's go and create a work item. So I mentioned you can stay in the IDE the whole time. You can even stay in the, if I click on here, web access, this will take you to the web version of TFS. So web access, I should have said always allow. There we go, that's better. So this will take me to Team Foundation Server, and it will show me my team dashboard, which isn't particularly well set up at the moment. I just installed this a couple of days ago. This is running a beta build of Team Foundation Server hot off the presses. It's a pre-release build sort of thing that I just pulled down and installed for you guys today. So, there's nothing much in there. But if I go to work, I can see my work items, and there they are, and there's my bug, and I can do that. So I could edit the work items in the web if I wanted to. But actually, as a developer, what I want to do is I just want my work here in front of me in the clips in my IDE. So there's my work, and I want to create a new, I realise now, we've got no product backlog item for do some loc to Dutch. Okay, and I'll assign that to Martin, and we'll save that. And then I'm going to, what do I want to do? Yeah, there's my product backlog item. And then maybe from that, I'm going to create a child task of localize into Dutch. Okay, there we go. And this is my task. Let's make it a bit bigger. This is the same task, the same data that's displayed on the web, that's displayed on Visual Studio, that's displayed on Windows, wherever. It's the same data. It's just represented to me in Mackie ways. I've got Mackie tabs, and it looks kind of Mackie. So localizing to Dutch, this should the Dutch, preferably pretty bad Dutch. Cheers, because I am English, of course. There we go. Okay. So, let's save that. File, save. Notice, file, save. Everything just works as you'd expect. Now I've got a task number, task 14. There we go. Great. And if I look in my links I have here, that's linked to the parent product backlog item. And if I go back to my work item query here, when I check in, I can associate my check-in with something from my query. So actually, let's do a quick query as well now. So we'll say, I want to see, please, any work items of any state and associated to equals me. Yeah? So, here I am in Eclipse building a list of the queries I would like of work items. Give me any work item associated to me, please. Let's do file save as. I'm going to save this as a query. So this is going to be my work. I'm going to save it in the My Queries folder, which is a place where you can put personal queries. There we go. And then here I'm just going to select from my work. And I'm just going to leave that view there now. I'll know that, you know. And then I can just go, oh yeah, Bessie's fixing this task. Great. Great. So check in. Yep. And that's checked it in. All good. So now if I do a history on billing service, so team, view history, we can see there's the check-in, fixing the code conventions. Is that why I made my comment? It was, doesn't it? Never mind. I did that against the wrong work item. But if I double-click on it, and I look at which work items it was associated in, there you go. It's associated with task 14. So here we have the traceability between work and source code. So changes to source code is associated to which work. That's really easy for a developer to do. They didn't have to leave Eclipse. They didn't have to go look up stuff. They just have to tick a box. Easy peasy. Even better than that, I actually, you remember I mentioned that you can create builds over your Ant or Maven builds. As well as .NET builds. So if I go into the build system, we can see, while I've been doing this, let's just bring up Fabricam billing, we can see here a bunch of builds have been happening. You see? These are continuous integration builds that have been going on the whole time while I've been checking in. Let's do another one quickly now, and we'll show you it happening. And I'll show you how you create a build. So, blah, 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 blah. See that. Let's say that that fixes that particular bug, just so we can show you. And we'll say fix bug. Hit check in. Yeah, I'm sure. We can switch that off if you want to. There we go. So if we now go back to the Build Explorer, hit refresh. Oops, go to queued. There we go. We can see there's the build running right now. Even better than that, again, not leaving Eclipse, I'm going to double click on the build. I'm going to bring up the build. I can go in and I can watch the build running on the build server. I can get in real time, these are the warnings from Ant while it's running the build on the build server, and it will come through and I can click on and get my Ant log file if I wanted to. I'm just learning, has it finished? Yes, yeah, green. Yeah, okay. And we can, if I go back to the summary, we can see that particular build ran then, it was pretty fast, ran for 14 seconds. It was associated with change set 56. It was linked with bug 3. And this is a summary. And not only did it run my Ant build script, but it also went and ran all my JUnit unit tests and published that JUnit test data into TFS. A single source of the truth, regardless of where your development is. Okay. So cool. Now, builds. Surely builds are really complicated setup, involves lots of configuration, blah, blah, blah. Well, you still have to do your build, you know, you still have to build your build as a Java person would do their build, like Eclipse or Ant. We don't invent a whole new build language for you. We use the one that you're most comfortable with. And that's as a Java developer, that's great news. So I still have my Ant and my Maven build scripts, for example. And if I go into here and say, here's my Ant one, or I've got a Maven one, how hard is it to create a build? Well, it turns out it's pretty easy. You go to new build definition, and we'll say Maven-based build. So I've got an Ant one. Let's create one from... Maven's a different build system in Java world. There's two models. There's either Ant, which is like make and MS build and things, or there's Maven, which is more declarative. I always think of it as like the Ruby on Rails of build languages. It's, you know, all about convention over configuration and things. So anyway, so I'm going to do a Maven-based build. I'm going to say... before I do that, let's go into here, and we'll just edit this build. Rather than getting it to build on every single check-in, just because that will slow down the machine if we have too many builds running, I'm just going to make it a manual build. Or, I'll tell you what I'll do, I'll make it a scheduled build, and I'll make it run. What time is it now? So I'm going to make this run at 2:10. Oh, actually, this is going to be Central European time. This will be an interesting test, actually. Oh, 2:00. 2:30. I'm finishing at 2:30. Let's do it for 2:30 and we'll see what happens, eh? We'll see if we get in time. Okay, there we go. So we'll see if that builds at that time. Right then. In the meantime, let's create a new build. So we'll come in here. We've got a new build definition. And we'll say Maven build. How do you want the build to be triggered? We have lots of different options. Notice I'm doing all this from Eclipse. I'm never leaving Eclipse, and I'm doing some pretty advanced stuff. So I'm going to say continuous integration, build on every check-in. There are other options available. We'll go talk about some of those in a second, but let's do continuous integration. Let's tell it what I would like to build. Well, I just want to build, for this particular build, I just want to build my billing service project, which is over here in accounting. So let's build that. Let's set some defaults. So where do you want the build results to live? TFS 11 drops, let's call it Maven CI 2, something like that. And then, how do you want it to do the build? Well, I want my build to be based on Maven, please, Mr. Team Nation Server. So we've got two options here. In Eclipse, we have two options, Ant or Maven. I want Maven, okay. And it goes and looks for the first Maven file it can find in the build, in the workspace that you've given it, which happens to be the one I want, because I've done this demo a few times, so I know how to make it quick. So there we go. So it's found it already. Hit finish. And there we go. It's doing all the stuff it needs to do. Great. It knows how to do the build now. So I'm going to hit OK. Talk about another time. And so now I've created the build. If I go down here, he says... What happened then? Sorry. Okay, there we go. Oh, that's weird. Right, so I'm going to right-click, and I'm going to make sure that builds work. So right-click, hit Q, and now I'm just manually running my build just to make sure the build's working. And being a nervous sort of chap, I'm actually going to watch it build just to see what happens, because you know what? This might not actually run, because Maven actually needs an internet connection to do a build, and I can't remember if I set my internet up or not before I started on stage. There we go. This will be exciting for everybody. So it's currently running, it's ran for 6 seconds already, and we'll watch the log. It's done a get of the source code. It then labels the source code as soon as it gets it, so you know which version of the source code corresponds to which build. It does all that automatically for you. You don't have to build that into your build scripts. It failed because it's not on the internet. Well, how do we know that's the reason? Well, if I go down and I go to the log, it'll actually show us. It'll come back with an error somewhere. Blah, blah, blah. Never mind. Let me see if I can get this. No. Okay. Actually, it might not have been that. Oh, sorry about that. I should have tested that one, sorry. But yeah. We know our Maven builds are broke, don't we? That's brilliant. Instantly, we got the indication. We can drill in and we can figure out why. But rather than letting you bore with that and getting the internet working on stage, what I'll actually do is I'll customize again with that, the Ant build. So let's do edit build definition. Trigger, let's go back to manual, and let's go back to this Ant build we had earlier. I want to tell you some of the other build types we have. So as well as scheduled builds, we have this one here called a gated check-in. So, okay. So if we're on... Oh, I'm months it's been. Right. Team Foundation Server has a feature called shelving. Who's heard of shelving? Ah, brilliant. Okay, great. There we go then. So shelving, for the, is about 50% of the audience. Shelving is you can take a copy of your source code, store it on the server, and it's there. It's not checked in. It's not polluting the code base, but it's stored on the server, so it's safe. And you can use shelf sets to transfer code between team members, so you can do code reviews and make sure you, everything's working on it, whatever you want. Shelf sets are a great feature of TFS. We use shelf sets in our build process too. A gated check-in stops compilation errors and really dumb mistakes from getting into your source code. Because what a gated check-in build does is it says, before you are allowed to check in to the repository, I'm going to take your check-in, I'm going to shelve it, I'm going to take that code onto the build server, run a build. Only if it passes the rules that are in the build will I then check it into the source code on your behalf. And that's how we have our check-ins enabled. Now, they're good for a few reasons. If you have a team that's quite junior and keep checking in rubbish, it stops that happening. If you have a team that aren't junior, hopefully, but still occasionally check in rubbish, you know, not looking at anyone in particular, then it also stops that from happening. And that's the thing I actually quite like, because I work at Microsoft now, and it can be quite an intimidating place to work. You know, you're walking down the corridor, and one minute you'll see, like, Anders Halsberg, and another minute you'll see, like, Brian Harry, and, you know, it's like, ooh, there's lots of clever people around here, and then there's little me who checks in stupid things occasionally, you know. Maybe I check in a stupid thing once a year, you know, I wish. Well, we have 3,000 people working on the Visual Studio product. If they were all as good as me, and I'm not a rubbish developer, I'm not the best, but I'm not rubbish. If they all were to check in one bad thing a year, we'd have the build broke 10 times a day. Not good. So we use gated check-in so that we make sure the build is good before we check in. So let me switch. I switched on. Did I switch on gated check-in? Can't remember. Let's right click. Edit build definition. Trigger gated check-in. Great, yeah, I do that. And so I'll quickly show you what this experience is like. So I'm going to come in here. I'm going to get rid of that comment. Blah, blah, blah. Hit Control S. Yeah, check-in. When I go to check-in button, oops, I forgot to leave a comment. I'll leave a useful comment. Unfortunately, I haven't written a check-in comment which is make sure this makes sense. You know, never mind. Are you sure? Yes. It's going to say, hey, sorry, you need to build your changes for validation before they can be committed to the server. So it's going to shelve it, it's going to build it. I'm going to uncheck that just for speed. And then off it goes, and it's going to actually create the build for us, and it's created that, and it'll show us the state of that build. So I'm going to let that go. You notice what it has done is it's rolled back. It's taken the shelf set and stored it on the server, and it's rolled back my version to the version before I was making the changes, because I told it to. It can work a couple of different ways. Let's let it do that, because I'm actually going to use this to show you a new feature that's been added in. So, and if we go and we watch the build, it was Fabricam, wasn't it? Yeah, it's completed. Fantastic. Okay, that's a fast build. So that build succeeded now. So if I did a view history on this piece of code, team view history, we can actually see that the code was checked in by the build server. Sorry, the code is checked in. It says for me, but if you look on the change set details, by user, yeah. It was checked in on behalf of me by the build server. You can get to that data. But it shows you it's from it was me that checked it in. Okay. But locally, I don't have that version yet. I have the version that has fixed parrot in here. If I was to do a right-click, compare with latest version, we would see that there's a difference between those files, okay? Assume somebody else checked in, class C, now, and I didn't know that had happened, you know? Assume I was just happily working. I'm doing some changes over in class A. I need to make some changes in class C. And I come down here and I start typing. Yeah? So add a comment, okay? Fantastic. So now I go... I go to check in. And I can show you the conflict behaviours in the build stuff, but let's not do that to confuse things. What I wanted to show you was, as you know, I'm a good developer, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to right-click here and do a team get latest. That would be nice. Just, you know, I like to get latest before I check in, just to make, and then I'm going to run all my unit tests again, make sure I haven't broke everything, because I'm, you know, I'm a good developer, I promise you. I promise you I'm a good developer. So I do get latest version. In the old days, you would have got scary conflict, error. Two people have edited this file at the same time, error. You go and look at the conflict, and you press the auto resolve button, and it resolves it, and you think, why did you bother me with that? It's like telling me that a semicolon's missing, you know? If you know there's a semicolon missing and aware of a semicolon's missing, then just put the semicolon in. We don't do that. But what we do do is, if there's a conflict that it can automatically resolve, then we resolve it for you. Because normally that's what you want. But what it hasn't done is it's warned you and told you what happened. It hasn't yet checked in that file. You know, when you've done a get, well, it would have done that if I'd done a check-in as well. So I've done a get. It's automatically resolved the conflict for me. Yes, so if I right-click on here and do team compare, you can now see what's different between my file and the... Oh, sorry, wrong one. I'm going to do team... compare with unmodified workspace version. We can see what's different in my file system between the last version I got. No, you can't see what it changed because it's resolved it for you. It resolved the conflict automatically. You can... You've seen here what changes I've made, because I told it to explicitly do the get latest. Sorry, but you can come in and actually do a view history and see what's changed if you want to. So I can do a team view history, and I can compare my version with that version, and I can see what the total differences are between the last, you know, the last version back. Okay. Sorry, I didn't explain that well. I'll show it in a bit. History. Compare. Yeah, what would happen if I had I'd done something that wasn't easily and safely auto mergeable? So I'm going to just get rid of this. I'm going to roll back to that version there, and I'm going to do a team view history. I'm going to go back in time, and I'm going to get this particular file, get this version, okay, and then there. So I'm now on an older version of that file again. And if I go into here and I say fix this line, there we go, Command S, and I'm also going to add a comment. Oops. There we go, hit Command S. And then we can now see, if I do a get latest team, in fact, if I do right click on here and I'm going to do a get latest at the parent level, because this is what you normally do, get latest. We'll see there's a conflict. We've got a new conflict experience in Eclipse, in the TFS 11 era of Eclipse. So it actually brings up your conflicts as a little editor. So you can keep on working and go look at what the conflicts were. You know, I can compare from here. Compare local to server, local to original, original to server, whatever I want. You know, local to server, there we go. What's different? Okay, right, I see. So it knows there's a conflict, and it won't auto-merge it for you. So we can merge that one ourselves. So we can say merge in a merge tool. We can bring it in. Which line do we want? You know, I want that chain. In fact, what I want to do is let's remove that line, because I obviously wanted it removed, and I want comment. Hit save, and that's now resolved the conflict for me. So if the reason why it's handy having it as an editor, you can go do a bunch of investigations, look around, do a lot of work, and then come back to your conflicts. You don't have to do them all in a big modal dialog box. Yes, sir? Can you turn off auto-merge? Yes, you can. There's a preference in to turn off auto-merge if you wish. So, I will show you that, but I know it's not in this particular build. But we have added it. We are adding the preference, so yes. Okay. And also, there's a behavior on the server you can play with as well. A question? The question was, what if you want a different compare tool? You can actually go in and configure. If you don't like the built-in one in Eclipse, you can go in and do team, and you can set up your own compare tools. So, for instance, I have one here for pings, for PNG images. I don't particularly want a binary compare in Eclipse. What I'd rather have is a nice graphical compare utility. The Mac has one of those. It's really nice, so I use it for comparing images. So, and you can do your own merge tools as well and configure the command lines and, you know, so whatever you want. So you've got a bunch of parameters you can pass to it. So, yeah, you can have your own merge tools. Okay. What I want to do, though, is to show you the... I wanted to show you the... switch that to that. I'm going to switch off... No, we'll leave a checking policy on so you can see it. Eclipse, brilliant. Eclipse works. What about the command line? Let's just undo a bunch of stuff here. What about the command line experience? Woohoo! This is... How many demos do you expect to come into this sort of thing? So I'm going to come in here, and I'm going to see what we've got. Okay, we've got a bunch of stuff there. Big change in TFS 11. This is Unix, so not everyone might know what these bits stand for. These are the permissions masks sort of thing. Notice all the files in my local file system when I did a get. W, that means write. All the files now in what's called a local workspace in TFS are writable by default when you do a get. Checkout has gone away in a local workspace. You can use what's called a server workspace, which is the old way of working in TFS, and people still prefer that for really, really, really big workspaces or quite controlled environments. You can run with a server workspace, which is what we have today, but in TFS 11 you can run with a local workspace. You don't need to check out anymore. You can just edit. So that's great. So as a command line developer, I can just come in here. Oh, even better. Let me just show you this. Dare I do this? Okay, let's do it anyway. RM minus R star. Oh, great. Let's do an LS. Oh, no. Everything's gone. Yeah. In the old world, remember, if you were to do a TF get now, in TFS 2010, I say the old world, in your world, not in my world, but yeah, in TFS 2010, if you do a TFS get and you hit return, the server would say, all files are up to date. And you go, no, they're not, I just deleted them. Save me. And the reason why it says all files are up to date is because a server workspace has been designed to give you two things. Incredible performance for large workspaces, like incredible performance, and increased communication so you know when people are working on files. The downside of that is you have to tell the server whenever you do something because the state of your local file system is remembered by the server. So if you delete things locally and haven't told TFS by doing a TF delete, TFS 2010 doesn't know about it. In TFS 11 with local workspaces, we know about it because the workspace state is stored locally. So we now do a TF get, we get all our files back. Brilliant. So all our files are back. Fantastic. I like local workspaces already. Another reason why I like it is I can now just go into Vi and edit my build sh. I'm a hello world kind of guy, so here we have a hello world script, you know. And let's just add a bit more to this. Okay, escape, control, I can just save that straight away. I didn't need to do TF checkout. I can just edit files. That makes it a heck of a lot easier to work with systems where we don't have a source control integration, like Vi, like command line tools, like Xcode, because Xcode doesn't allow a pluggable SCM model. We'd like it to. We'd love to build one. So, you know, ask Apple next time you see them. We would love to build that. But it doesn't for now, so you can just edit files in Xcode, and then you can just do a TF check-in outside of Xcode. So I come in here, and I've edited it. If I do a TF status now, so TF status tells you the status of your files. It's always been there, and we can see, look, there it is. If I'd had any adds, it would have automatically detected my adds as well and asked me if I'd like to add them or delete, that sort of thing. So there's build.sh. Now, this is the clever bit. Okay, it's detected I've edited it. I'm on Unix. I'm going to go A plus... I'm going to add execute bit to this file. So now if I have a look, the build sh... Ooh, that's big. The build sh now has an execute bit against it, you see? That's because this is a build script. I want to be able to run it, and I need execute bit on Unix. So, what do we do? Well, if I do TF status for that file now, we can see not only does it detect automatically I've edited the file, it automatically detects that I've added the execute bit to the file. And it checks that in as part of the file, transparently in the background, no user intervention needed, it just works as you expect as a cross-platform developer. And I left the check-in policy, so it's going to warn me that I haven't provided a comment. Sorry, this machine's getting increasingly slow. Yeah, oh no. Yeah, please provide some comments, star, damn it. Comment. Check in from. Right, there we go. Brilliant, there we go. So I've added the execute bit. And if I go to Windows in Visual Studio now, I could see the history. I could see execute bit getting switched on. From, say, Eclipse on Windows, if I was writing a build script in, you know, that I wanted to be executable, you don't have execute bit in Windows world, so we've added a property onto the page so you can right-click and say, make this executable when you do a get on a non-Windows file system. So, and that's an example of a feature that we added to Team Foundation Server specifically for cross-platform developers. You know, there was no need to add that for the Windows guys, but we really needed execute bit, so we added it to the server. Okay. Anybody want to see anything else before I'm about to go into wrap-up mode. So if anyone wants to see anything else while we're in here, let me know. I'm just going to fire up PowerPoint and hopefully it started working again because it was getting a bit slow. Sorry, the question was? Yeah, I mentioned that. Apple don't allow external SCM providers to integrate into Xcode. So what you can just do is edit files away and then either use the command line or use you can get a lightweight version of Eclipse called the Eclipse Runtime Platform and install the plugin into it and just use it as a graphical interface. And you just check in because we can detect changes. Before, in TFS 2010, it's quite hard because you have to explicitly check out the file before you remember to edit it in Xcode. It's not an easy workflow. Whereas in TFS 11, it's very easy. You just edit away and then just do a check in the command line. We'd like to have built-in integration, but as I say, if you can raise a bug with Apple for me, asking them to make it a pluggable SCM model, then I'd love to do that. Okay. Right. So I'm going to start wrapping up when I get to the slides. So the key takeaway is that a single source of the truth is a great way to get people to focus on customer requirements. A single source of the truth is a great way to help your developers build collective ownership around not just requirements, but also code. They can see everybody else's code. They can see everybody else's builds, everybody else's check-ins. It all just works. Wow, PowerPoint is being bad. And also, what I hope I've shown you is that Team Foundation Server is a great place to have your single source of the truth. You've got all the tooling you need there to support it. Okay, we're coming up slowly. And then, let me just check I haven't forgotten anything else I wanted to cover with you. If you want some more information, I'm going to show you the slide when it's loaded. Command line. Oh, yeah. The one thing that everybody asks me is, so what can't you do in Eclipse or cross-platform that you can do, say, in Visual Studio? The biggest feature that's missing still is a thing called branch visualization. It's a way of being able to do a map of branches. We still haven't got that yet in Eclipse. I really wanted to get it in. It just didn't make the cut for this release. The reason why it didn't is because it actually, as a developer, it's not something you use every day. It's something that you use more often as a source code administrator. So that's why we didn't get it in this time. When we build it, we'll build it in a way that's we'll build it in a cross-platform way that we can expose to the maximum people. I'm thinking probably the web would be the place where it will get built the most, but hooked into Eclipse. Oh, wow, it's really bad. And then, blah, 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 blah. That's that. So, and that's the biggest feature that's missing. Administration, it used to be that administration wasn't available in Eclipse, but it is in Visual Studio. So what we did was we moved a bunch of administration, you know, setting security permissions. We've moved that into the web in TFS 11. So now it's available to you regardless of where you are. We always release Team Explorer Everywhere, the cross-platform client, with every major TFS release. We sim ship every time. We have done since 2005. We have the SDK available for extensibility. And the biggest features I wanted to make sure I showed you in TFS 11, specifically for cross-platform developers, are local workspaces and execute bit. Bang on time. Oh, great. There we go. My questions, if anyone has any questions, then please let me know. Otherwise, I'm off to another session, and I'll see you around today. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you.